Informally, I could notify ABAG Administrative Committee members that they don't get a gold star for sitting through the Operations Committee meeting. So if they do wish to leave, that'll be just fine with the chair. Like to open this meeting of the Operations Committee. I will note that it is now 9:45 a.m. and having consulted with our general counsel, it is appropriate for us to start this meeting, even although on the front of the yellow cover it says that 10 a.m. But the yellow cover doesn't count. The posted agenda counts. So here we are, and can I confirm a quorum, please?
Yes, we do have a quorum.
We have a quorum. We have a consent calendar, and I would ask for a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor of approval say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Consent calendar is approved. Agenda item number 3, a contract change order amendment to Clipper Cards.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to abstain on this item. My county's recently become aware of some new form that may or may not need to be filled out. And I just think it's probably better if I abstain until I get a full understanding of the legality of it.
Thank you, Commissioner Haggerty. Appreciate that. And we'll notify the commissioner when we get to agenda item number 4, I'm sure. That being said, Lynn Valdivia is going to be giving the staff report on this matter. This is a matter for committee approval. Lynn?
All right, this is more complicated.
Go.
There we go. Now I can even hear myself. Good morning. I'm Lynn Valdivia. I'm the principal for the Clipper program, and I will give a short update on the Clipper program, answer any questions you might have, and then request approval for one contract item. I'd like to start with program growth. As I reported last month, ridership continues to grow on Clipper. We've achieved a record Clipper ridership in October at 700,000 rides per weekday. Market share continues to grow, especially on BART. Market share grew 2% between last month and this month on BART. We're now at 54.2% of the riders paying for their rides with Clipper. We're very pleased with this growth, and we are also just shy of another contract benchmark of 20 million transactions per month. If you recall, the transit agencies pay the Clipper contractor a $100,000 assurance payment each month that 20 million transactions are not processed through the system. For the month of October, we had 19.6 million fee-generating transactions, so they should be happy once we get to 20 million and their operating fees are reduced. I'd like to turn to some recent articles, our media attention. Even today, there was an article on this, on Clipper privacy and data retention. We currently retain data for the Clipper program for 7 years. As noted in the memorandum for this item, the media reports have misstated the information that's collected by the Clipper program, or they failed to mention that the Clipper program even has a privacy policy. So I wanted to run through some of the details of what the privacy policy and data retention policies are for Clipper. Back in 2006, this committee approved the Clipper privacy policy, and as well as an amendment in 2011. The privacy policy strictly limits sharing of Clipper customers' personally identifiable information to four situations. The first is transit agencies participating in the Clipper program for the purposes of operating and managing the program. Data is shared with the contractors that manage the Clipper program, the California Department of Justice, and Better Business Bureau when necessary to respond to any consumer complaints. And then we share data in order to comply with the laws and legal processes served on MTC or the Clipper contractor, such as through a subpoena. regarding data that's collected on individual riders' travel. The system has limited ability to identify specific travel history. The program collects location-specific information for several of the agencies, including BART, Caltrain, and the ferries, and this is used to calculate distance-based fares. So the system would have information such as travel from BART Embarcadero Station to the Lake Merritt Station. On other systems, the travel data would contain like a bus route or a bus route in a zone. For example, a patron boarded Golden Gate bus route 24 in zone 2 and exited in zone 1. It cannot identify where the person boarded or specifically exited. But it should also be noted that the program does not require customers to provide any personal information. Personal information is only required when a customer wants to protect their card balances, if the card is lost, stolen, or damaged, if the customer qualifies for age-based discounts, and customers who pay using credit or debit cards via our website or our call center. Currently, 54% of Clipper cards are used anonymously. Regardless, we are reviewing the record retention policy for both Clipper and Fast Track, and we will be reporting back to this committee when we complete the review. Does anyone have any questions?
Any questions of staff? Vice Chair?
Thank you. I appreciate that report. I know there's been a lot of discussion recently in the news about it. And I guess I had a couple of questions. First of all, it's my understanding the way Clipper works is it really tracks the card, that there's mm-hmm. no, you know, if somebody buys a card with a credit card, then you know who owns the card or somebody's registered, but it really tracks the card or the vehicle, correct? I mean, in other words, the data that's collected is how the card is
yes.
used.
Yes, okay. So it's got a card serial number,
right.
So the data contains the card serial number.
Exactly, and it's the same with the car, it's the license plate. And I guess the question I would ask is when in doing the review of the record retention, I think that the information that we've really solidly put together our program in terms of who has access to the data. It's really to comply with the service or the law. But I guess the question I would like to see is really to have a look as our retention policy for both. I know we received the Fast Track as well as the Clipper data, is to really look at what is our, you know, kind of minimum requirement to keep that information and to try to look at minimums as opposed to, and really have a basis. I think it'd be helpful to really have a substantive sort of legal, financial, fiduciary basis for why we would set either of those limits. So it would be helpful in terms of when we come back to look at
okay.
any changes.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Liccardo.
Thank you, Chair. I would assume that we do disclose Clipper information pursuant to subpoena or court order. Would that be right?
Correct.
We probably should say that publicly if that's what we do.
Okay.
It seems to me, I know folks get worried about that, but I think, you know, it's proper that we respond to subpoenas,
yeah,
criminal
I,
investigations,
I think in fact,
and that's something
when
we
responded in the press to the issue, we've drawn attention to that. We've also drawn attention to the fact that out of million transactions, I think with Clipper have had 3 instances where it's occurred. With Fast Track, we've had more because it's been in existence longer, but it's a very, very small number in both programs.
Thank you.
Any other questions at this time? I am seeing none. I do not have any cards from members of the public, so I would entertain a motion that we move forward with this item by making a motion. Okay, we have a motion which has been seconded. Any further discussion? I am seeing none. All those in favor of passing this contract change order amendment, say aye.
Aye.
That is done, and the committee has approved it. We now move forward to agenda item number 4. This is a funding agreement, a BART real-time enhancement project and Jay Stagey. Sorry, Mr. Stagey, and you will give us the staff report.
I will indeed. We're rolling this into an overall update of the hub signage program as well, and at the very end, I'll circle back to that real-time enhancement project funding agreement. It's been several years since I've been here. I'm Jay Stagey, and I'd like to present this update for the hub signage program. It's the first portion of the transit connectivity plan to be implemented. I'm going to give you an overview of the implementation process to date. I'm also then going to provide you actual pictures of the signs in the field. You may have seen some already, but we've got a number of those for you. And then we'll finish up with some outcomes and that real-time enhancement project. So the hub signage program was in result of the transit connectivity plan, which identified shortcomings in the wayfinding, transit information, and real-time, actually no real-time, at most of these transit locations across the Bay Area. I will give you details as far as what this wayfinding signage and these real-time information, transit information displays consist of when we look at the actual signs themselves. And here's a look at where we're spreading them across the region. There's a number of them, 24 in total. And while the transit connectivity plan did provide the shortcomings of the current signage system, it didn't really give us that many standards to make sure that we don't replicate past issues and so that we make certain that we address them all. So what did we do? We developed standards. And if you look at this collage of signs here, you can see that we have done so with using logos and icons. Also, we use colors and formats. And finally, what you can see very ubiquitously is an orange circle with a white eye inserted in it. And that is more or less our branding for this sign type, for this information that you'll find at the 24 regional hubs. These standards were actually developed by MTC along with the transit operators, especially BART. BART had been in the process of redesigning their own signage, and so we kind of worked along with them to, in order to make certain that we had greater buy-in and foster opportunities for success. This is an overall look of the process. Again, the signage standards preceded everything, and there were the 24 locations. They were administered by 5 different entities, with BART and MTC overseeing the majority of the implementation at these locations. We will be coming to you in December for a real-time procurement that where we will be awarding a contract for the remainder of the real-time work to be done. That had been held off awaiting availability of real-time predictions, or rather real-time data. So that will represent the last portion of the hub signage program proper to be installed, and that should be done in 2013. So the hub signage program should be entirely installed within 2013. We've extended the real-time phase there to incorporate this real-time enhancement project as well. So overall, we should be seeing this go through 2014, but the majority of the hub signage program will be done in 2013. So let's look at the signs. There was the wayfinding signage. The first type is directional signage, and here you see at the Palo Alto Caltrain station. You can see, this was working a second ago. Did I just turn it off? Oh, there we go. Okay, you can see there, you can see the icons and the logos. You can see the color that is used to identify the outside area. And here's another icon for buses. A little more colorfully, you can, because these are backlit, because they're in the underground stations, here at the Montgomery BART Muni station, you can see again the colors, the green denoting the exit. You can see the transit eye. You can see the logo. And you can also see in the background the Muni Metro entrance sign, which is actually the same size as the sign in the foreground. The opposite side of that sign will have the double-sized BART entrance sign on it. That's been an issue in these downtown stations, being able to identify which is the area to go to. So we've double-sized it, and that's actually something we've got a lot of comments on that people have been very happy to see. The next type of wayfinding sign is kiosks. These kiosks are double-sided. They're on the street. They are freestanding. They provide transit maps. They provide the routes and the stops in the vicinity, as well as, if you can see, again, at the top there, we have the orange eye. In the black area, there's actually directional signage that accompanies all those maps. So it's a very useful location. Here's one in front of the San Jose Transit Center at Diridon. Here's one also at the San Francisco Ferry Building. And you can see that they're very helpful in a transit-dense area like that to provide as much information as possible. The last type of wayfinding sign itself is a hub ID sign. It's something that you think of as very basic. But here at Palo Alto, this one is right there in front of the train. If the train's not going by, you may not even know how to get there or where you are. So this really is something that was identified as a shortfall. This is a standard type of sign that we've been installing. But we also allow a little difference in format for these hub ID signs because, you know, given a different hub, you may want to have a slightly different feel. This one here is obviously 4th and King, right there in front of you. That's one I actually like quite a bit. So it starts the program, it's the middle of the program, it ends the program. Here are transit information displays. These are very similar to the wayfinding kiosks, using some of the same maps, only in larger size. You have a transit map of the station there, so you really know the layout of the station. This is particularly helpful in the busier stations. Here you have the stops map, which lets you know where the stops are in the vicinity of that. And finally, where the lady's in front of, that's the routes map, so you know where those routes will go. The last portion is the schedules and fares, so you have information letting you know how much it's going to cost and when they'll more or less be arriving. You can see above there is where the real-time information is going to go, and again, that ubiquitous transit eye above there. Here's a slightly different array of the TIDS information. It's a triangular one. It's arrayed in order to fit the location where it is, as well as the fact that there's a little less information, so we have three panels. Again, you can see also a wayfinding sign above it. The last type of information that we've been providing is real-time information. This here is the Embarcadero BART Muni station at the Clipper kiosk. This, again, you can see the logos, the operator logos, and it provides information for the next several departures for each of the transit vehicles that are operating out of that hub. This was the pilot location, so based on information we received at this pilot and transit operator feedback, we have developed a revised interface. This revised interface, again, relies heavily on color, the BART color, the BART logo, and again, we have the branding of the transit eye. This will, again, provide this information in various locations. Actually, the BART stations will be seen in downtown San Francisco and Oakland, that our hubs will be seeing this information installed within the next couple of months. I'm hopeful at the end of this month we'll have some up at Civic Center. And you'll see that very soon rolling out to help all the other signage systems that you may have seen already out there. And again, this will be replacing the existing interface that you saw at the pilot at Embarcadero. And one last little fun type of sign type is this flap sign. It's one that you may have seen in the East Coast, so you see them in the various train stations. We will be making revisions for this as it is applied to the ferry building. It will have, again, that transit eye, and it will feature, which will be right up in the upper corner here, and then we'll be featuring the logos of the different operators along the side there. And finally, we will be having, rather than guaranteed seating at the bottom, we will be able to provide emergency messaging capability, which will also be a feature of the other real-time signs as well. So let's look at some of the outcomes. Obviously, I feel like we are going to have some great signs out there. We already do, and at the end of the day, we'll have a number more. We also have these regional standards, which serve as a great design foundation to be built upon. We've developed the operations and maintenance plan, whereby the various stakeholders, the transit operators, are on the hook. They need to replace and make sure that these signs are in good condition. Obviously, it's new, early in the game on that, and we'll keep a good eye on that. The program has really benefited from the economy. When we were letting out these contracts, let's be honest, we really got some favorable bids during during the last several years, and so that's been able to allow us to stretch our dollars and have a much more robust system. And finally, because we've got a really good product and good working relationship with all of our partners, we've been able to leverage opportunities with the different operators, BART, Caltrain, AC Transit, and WETA, where they're actually taking some of these signage recommendations and rolling it into their systems. You may have seen it at some of the other stations, some of the AC Transit stations. You might have seen this eye at non-hub locations. Similarly, we are working with Vacaville and Smart, and they are looking to install it in their systems as well. And last but not least, because of this great relationship that we developed with BART, we, in the course of implementing the hub signage program, we realized we really would like to have more real-time signs at those downtown stations in particular, so you don't have to kind of look at them on the wall, but they'll really be in your field of vision. So in working with BART staff, we identified funding opportunities, for State of Good Repair funds, and they were awarded a $3.2 million grant in order to install more of those signs. There is a local match requirement for that, and that's what we're here for today for that item, the funding agreement with BART, in order to provide them that $400,000 as a portion of that local match. So I would like to ask for your approval for that item in order to keep this project running forward. And I'd be happy to answer any additional any questions you may have on the project.
Thank you for that report. Let's see. Commissioner Halstead.
Well, I think this looks great, and I think we've made great progress, and I thank you and all the staff who's worked on it because it's important. And I have a couple of questions. One is, do we have a way of evaluating the effectiveness of our signs once they're installed of this wayfinding, particularly for first-time users or for tourists coming through who don't know the system?
We are going to undertake a pilot project of the real-time enhancement project at Civic Center. We did some initial focus groups prior to installing the signs, so we got a good sense going in and revised them accordingly. We're going to be doing a pilot for the Civic Center where we are going to be installing the enhanced real-time. As part of that process, we will definitely be asking them to look more largely at the overall signage system that's installed, and hopefully if there's any way we can incorporate that. We've been revising the standards all along, and we'll incorporate that type of sense in it. If there's any really strong ones, hopefully we'll be able to go back and make some small revisions that are of the signs that are in place.
Right. It's particularly important, obviously, for stress times when there's a crisis or for new first-time users.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
The other question I had was, I still feel that BART doesn't do an adequate job of mapping at the station level. So once an occasional user of a BART gets down in the bottom level of the station, trying to make sure they're getting on the right train, going to the right place, it's a little hard to find the list of stations that the train will stop at.
You know, I've got to be honest, that's in BART's purview,
I know
per
that,
se.
Yeah.
But in the course of working with them, I'm aware that they are developing program to implement some of this information as well on their platform level. The level of detail of which that is, I'm not exactly certain, but you may have seen some of those maps that they have on the walls of the station themselves that give you a line and where you are in that line. That was part of an initial pilot that they were looking at. I think they're going to be more robust in rolling that out, and I believe they're going to be installing some of the station maps on the platform level as well.
I think they could use a lot more. I see a good deal of confusion and people standing around looking, trying to figure it out. And it's
I definitely
not up
agree.
To the standards of other underground systems, as far as I can see. Anyway, it's great progress, and I think it makes a big difference in the viability of the whole program. If there is an overall identity to this movement through the Bay Area, so thank you very much.
Thank you,
Commissioner Bates.
Thank you. Tom Bates, representing Alameda County Cities. So I'm wondering, I think this is a great program. I would congratulate you on the progress you're making. And maybe this is my own ignorance, but real-time information, is that available to people with iPhones and BlackBerries?
Yes, it certainly is. It's available on the 511 system. You can get it pushed to you. You can get, they have stop ID. where you there specific stops have an ID where you can program your phone to get information on that. There's a number of different ways that you can achieve that type of information. Most operators are just coming online. For instance, AC Transit was one of the early adopters, so they have a real-time system. Their information as an early adopter, unfortunately, is not as they've got some problems with it being as well on the spot on as you'd like. Early adopters often have that. Additionally, BART has that information. SFMTA has that information. I believe SamTrans just came on with the information. But the other ones are a little bit further behind in terms of implementation. Golden Gate, I believe, will be coming up with it next year, Caltrain next year or later this year. So that's part of the reason we haven't necessarily, why the real-time is a little bit trailing. We didn't want to put up real-time displays that would be not have featuring any information. That's kind of a recipe for disaster or vandalism.
So to these systems come on board then, is it possible that at some point in the future we'd be able to inform the public more widely about this being available, or is it seen that in our judgment that the people who have these phones already know about this and are already plugged into this? And I'm just behind the times here.
I think it's pretty well known. There are a number of apps that are out there, but I think I think we could raise the profile a little bit. I would, for one, think that there are some people that aren't aware. I think you're right. There are a number of people that aren't aware, but I do believe that that increasingly people are becoming aware of this information.
This is Melanie Crotty. Maybe I'll just jump in a little bit on that. As Jay mentioned, we're still in the process of deploying the real-time system. But as we have deployed it with each of the agencies, we are working with them to post decals at the bus stops that will have the stop ID number that Jay alluded to, but also then to inform the passengers that this data is available. And for those agencies, in particular Muni and AC, they have started posting those decals up at their bus stops. And we have seen the usage go through the roof.
That's what I would think.
I think that we're finding the market kind of naturally, but we do need to make sure that those decals get up at the bus stops.
I think that would be great, especially at BART. If you had, and also AC, which I use, those two agencies. If we would have something like this, this is stop number 43 or whatever, and if you want to get this real time, go, this is how to do it.
Yep, BART's a little trickier since they have big stations and to find a place that's visible for them, and I would say that we have a ways to go to work that out with them.
Okay.
Just let me add to Commissioner Halstead's comments. When we went on a field trip with Commissioner Halstead, she introduced me to MuniApp, and MuniApp is cool, and it works real-time. iBART, at least up until recently, did not have real-time information. It had the real schedules were on there, but does it now have real-time information? I just hadn't used it recently. Has there been a recent change on iBART?
There is real-time information for BART. I don't use iBART. I use iCommute. There's one that has various operators on it. I mean, there's a number of apps out there we all could use.
Yeah.
And currently it provides real-time information for BART, for Muni, and for AC Transit.
Right. As you can tell, Commissioner Bates, people who are app maniacs on iPhones, we tend to collect them until we get pages of apps, and then the problem is finding the right app for the right occasion. But that being said, let me just thank you also. And if it's been a long while since you've been in front of this committee, come back sooner, because this was a grand report, much appreciated. We do have an action proposed for this committee, and that is that we authorize the executive director to negotiate and enter into funding agreement with BART totaling $400,000 to provide the local match funds to BART for a grant which BART will procure and install real-time signs at four regional transit hubs. Could I have a motion, please? Is there a second? There is. We have a motion with a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none. By the way, I had no public comment cards, hence I didn't ask anybody to step forward. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And nobody opposed, so that passes. And if I go back to my agenda, no public comment. Any other business? Seeing no other business, The next meeting would be on Friday, December 14th. And we'll adjourn this committee and pass the gavel to Commissioner Haggerty.